Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Raiders, review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. Coming up on this episode, got to talk about that ridiculous trade over the weekend with your boy Brooks, whichever one it was supposed to be. Talk a little bit about these college football players skipping ball games and where I think people are missing the point. But first, all right, now look, I am not a Knicks fan. I just kind of sort of moved to this city, but I am not a Knicks fan. However, if I were a Knicks fan, I would probably have some measure of like super duper feeling about your mans. Jim Dolan. Jim Dolan did an interview with Ian O'Connor, and in his interview with Ian O'Connor, he said that he was open to the possibility of selling the Knicks, that it would be something that he might consider. And Gabe, how does he not know you can't tell people that unless you're about to do it?
Yeah, I mean, once you kind of break the seal on that, the floodgates are open. The offers are going to come in. Everybody knew up until this point that they weren't going to be for sale at any point, so they just didn't even bother trying, and now it's on.
Also, man, now I feel like the fans got some leverage here, right? Like, once this man has demonstrated that he is giving some opening to the possibility of moving, I mean, ain't it about time for y'all to stop coming to games? Look. The thing that you want more than anything else in this world is for Jim Dolan to sell this team. Right now, I don't know how much gets changed if Dolan sells the Knicks. Like, I don't have a great answer. The reason I say that is whatever person is rich enough to buy the Knicks, you don't get that rich by knowing stuff about basketball. You just don't. Right? Now, sometimes you'll get some cats, they come in there, they get the organization right, they get things in order, they get everything straightened up, okay, cool, you like that, you know what I mean? And maybe you get that guy who does that for your team. But that ain't no promise. Look around the league. Like, let's think about this. How many team owners would you actually want? Like, when you look at another team in the NBA, how many of them are owned by somebody where you're like, yeah, I think it would be better if we had that guy owning our team? Now, with the Knicks, of course, better. You think anybody better, and you might be right. But I'm just saying, right? Like, hey, Gabe, you remember when we thought Mark Cuban was such a great owner?
Yep.
Right? Now he can't win, and his whole office was a disaster. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's my man named that owned the Heat? Mickey Arison. I think you could do all right with Mickey Arison owning your team. Shout out to Steve Ballmer. They're not an embarrassment anymore, right? So maybe you just need to get, you know, the co-founder of Google or something to buy the Knicks, and maybe he'll be the one to turn around. I don't know. I don't like that Joe Lacob dude, but, I mean, he seems to know something about running a basketball team.
Why don't you like Joe Lacob?
You ought to look Joe Lacob up.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of reasons why one couldn't like
Joe. You ought to look him up. Like, there's
just wanted to know yours.
Well, I just find him to be so smarmy, and I really do believe that he thinks that he is more integral to their success than, say, Steph Curry.
Yes, and smarmy tells you everything you need to know. Like, if you haven't met the guy, or if you haven't seen the guy on TV, and you just think of the adjective smarmy, I just think of kind of a wormy-like individual.
No, man, he's whack in so many ways, man. He just has a totality of whackness about him. Damn, I'm trying to think. Who else? You like the Grizzlies. Dude that owns the Grizzlies, that's the clown that be out here like trying to play pickup with dudes.
Yes.
You know, out there in the shooting sleeve. No, you wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want Mike. And he's Mike. Like, real talk. Like, none of us would want Mike to own our team. He's Mike. Would you want Reinsdorf, the Bulls dude? Would you want him to own your team?
I feel like the best owners are the ones that you know nothing about because they do their job and just kind of stay out of the way.
Yeah, that might be it, right? Like, do you want Glenn Taylor owning your team? Dude in Minnesota?
Do not want Glenn Taylor.
No. The dude that owns the Spurs, I suppose he's good at his job, but, you know, let's see how this continues in the we ain't got Tim Duncan no more era. You know, that was a fairly significant factor that we had here. But nah, man, like, the thing about owning a professional sports franchise is you don't get your money by owning a professional sports franchise, right? You get your money by doing something that is absolutely not the same as the thing that you are about to do. You know, like, I'd be curious to know, like, with these owners, how many other, like, companies they'd be up to buy for $1 billion in an industry that they don't really like know nothing about.
I can't think of anything outside of like sports, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have like super rich guy buys like, you know, NASCAR driving team or like drives like, you know, motorcycle racing team or something like that. But I mean, just from like a business sense, that's incredibly like unsmart.
Yeah. Like you don't want the owner of the Phoenix Suns. You see him get G-checked by that old lady at the city council meeting?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and, as I suspected this the first time I saw it and then researched and verified, that lady be at the meetings a lot. Right? Like she stood up there, like when she gets up, you feel like the people up there are like, hi, Greta. They know her. She be in the city council meeting raising hell all the time. Like I saw her described in some way, like as some kind of activist or something like that in Phoenix. And I haven't like bothered to follow up on that. Maybe that's true. Cause all I needed to know was what she was. The old lady at the city council meeting. They be one. She was there. She was ready. She'd had enough. You don't want that dude, owning your team. You want that dude in Sacramento?
Vivek Ranadive?
Yeah, the dude that suggested that they play defense 4-on-5 so they can snowbird on every possession.
Hey, you know, he was trying to bring his, like, innovative genius to the game.
Mm, yeah, he thought
he understood basketball.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, man. The cats with the money these days are these tech guys. And, you know, y'all listen to this show. You be listening to If You Haven't Heard. You want them dudes running the squad? I don't think you do. Yeah, like I honestly was able to pick out one, maybe two owners that I would be like, yeah, that guy seems cool. That guy seems like he's what's up. No, right? So, I mean, I do hope Knicks fans know this, that if the day came and Jim Dolan sold, you might not get a much better owner, but I think you get what it is that you really want, which is somebody who's not Jim Dolan. You know what I mean? Like that, y'all are at that point where that's all it is. Now, let me tell you a detail from this Ian O'Connor story. How about this dude plays his guitar on team flights? On team flights. He plays his guitar on team flights. Now, I feel like Dolan gets a little bit of a bad rap for the music stuff, right? You know, because he's got his band and he tries to write songs about things that end his life. And he's such an easy target to laugh at that we're going to pick on it and everything else. And, you know, the band, what's it called? JD and the Straight Shot. That's what they call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I ain't gonna pretend like I've really listened to them, but it's not like they don't sound like when you be listening to Manny Pacquiao sing. You know what I mean? Like, they're not that bad. Not in that way. It's not that level of what are you doing, right? But I mean, he's just a dude with a band. He just happens to be a billionaire. Right?
Might have to do a branch off segment of this where you
I review JD in the straight shot. Yeah, I say I write 2,000 words on it. But no, I mean, he's a dude in a band. The thing is, since he has $1 billion, he is able to do things that most people with bands of that quality are not able to do. Things like make yourself the opening act for the Eagles. Did you know he did that?
I just couldn't remember when, but I knew he did it at one point.
Yeah. It was recent. He made himself the opening act for the Eagles. And I don't like the Eagles, but I mean, you can do that because you got $1 billion. And I have to say, I applaud him for having the confidence to get up in front of a crowd that is coming to see the Eagles and they're getting you.
If you can't do that when you've got $1 billion, then what can you do?
Why
do you want that money if you can't do that?
Yeah, but hold on. Let's think about this for a second, all right? Okay, so, like, let's say I had $1 billion, okay? And I somehow owned the arena and OutKast was doing a show. I would not have the confidence to get up and rap in front of Madison Square Garden. I just wouldn't have it in me, right? Like, I do have respect for the fact that he is willing to go and do this in the face of all this ridicule. I mean, look, I ain't acting like I'm no super MC or nothing like that. And I ain't, you know, like, I feel like I can rap as well as that dude can sing. How about that?
Well.
But again, I don't think he's like good or anything.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
If he ain't that bad, then maybe we need to.
No. What I mean by he ain't that bad is he's not abject. You know, like he's not. Like I said, you ever listen to Manny Pacquiao sing?
I've heard it before, but I haven't listened to it like for any length of time.
Dog, let me tell you about Manny Pacquiao singing. This is a true story. One day, Manny Pacquiao came on Highly Questionable. And he mentioned that he had an album coming out. And he talked about the first single. And Dan asked him to sing. And I looked at Dan like, no. At least that's my recollection, is that I was thinking, please don't do this. He then sang. And so it's like, what's the, can you think of a situation in your life where you were not allowed to do the only thing that you could do in that situation, which is to bust out laughing? Do you have any situation in your life that you remember that falls in a similar line?
I mean, not in my life, but I can think of, you know, in movies and stuff, kids sitting in the back of a funeral and knowing that he can't laugh. He's trying to keep a straight face, or someone in a super serious meeting and knowing that they can't bust out laughing.
Yeah. Like, I've had two situations like this. One was in a wedding where I was serving as the best man, and something happened as the bride was walking down the aisle. Nothing to do with her, to be clear. She was lovely. But I couldn't laugh. And it was such a thing that I just kept smiling as hard as I could. And then I smiled until my eyes couldn't open. And then I had to start crying because that was where all the energy was going. And people were like, wow, this is so great. He's so touched by, you know, being happy for his friend. I wasn't thinking about him for a second. It was something else. Anyway, I had that happen. And then I had the time that Manny Pacquiao started singing, and I held it in. And like, I tried to play it off by closing my eyes and like nodding my head. You know what I mean? Like, I was trying to like ride to the beat. Like, I tried to do it, and then I let out one of these and my cover was blown. Dan reached over to smack me in the arm, and that brought me back. I'm like, my bad, dog. It wasn't on purpose. If you want to be real, you did it to yourself.
That sound, I mean, you almost could have muffed it by going into your elbow and trying to pass it off as a sneeze.
There was no mistaking what it was. there was no mystery as to what had gone on. Dolan like ain't that bad. You understand what I'm saying? You know, like, Manny Pacquiao is kind of like, okay, so like, if I told y'all I could rap, and then I started rapping like Crunchy Black, y'all would be clowning me. Dolan ain't like Crunchy Black bad. He just takes himself very, very seriously. But yeah, I wish I had the confidence to book myself at the opening act in that way. That's like when Shaq was out here rapping with real live dudes. I applaud you for having the confidence to think that you can do this, because I don't. I never would. Not me. But anyway, yeah, y'all get all kinds of owners. Y'all think y'all gonna get, but the dude be playing the guitar on the team plane. And honestly, I think that's enough to like, you could request a trade, right?
Yeah. Or at least try to leverage it into something.
Yeah, I don't want to work here anymore if this is what I got to do. Like, okay, so, I mean, I know how this is going to sound, but whatever. I found this app, right? And rather than you having to go get a massage, the massage people come to you, right? They set up the table, you get the massage done at your crib, right? Cool little service. I called it once, and dude showed up, and I forget what his name was, but it had a lot of 5% in it, right? Like, it was very, it was one of them names. And he set up, and he got to talking to me about, like, a bunch of stuff that I haven't heard since rap from the 1990s. Like, I've been wondering for a long time, since the 5%ers don't really rap no more, if the 5%ers is still out here, you know, the God Body dudes. You know, like, I've wondered what they've been up to, because really my only access to their way of life was through rap. And them 5%ers, they don't really got the rap game on lock like that no more, right? So, you know, okay, I don't really know much about them. But yeah, he was real, like, sun, moon, earth. Like, that was his inclination. Like, I assume that he went to massage school, and that might be the only school he'd been to. And I don't mean that to say that he is not informed, because if I felt very much so, like, that man reads a lot. But them books is like not sold in stores. You know what I'm saying? Like, you buy that book outside. You buy that book off a table. Anyway, gave him a massage. It was good, I have to say. And, you know, I got my record player set up. I got a big old stand with all those records on it. And so dude looks at it and was like, oh, so you a music guy, huh? And I was like, yeah, man, I do that. And he says, you like hip hop? And right there, I'm like, I got a feeling I know where this is going. And I say, yeah. You know, I like hip hop. Yeah, because I rap.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I knew that's where it was going. And so he says this to me like before the massage. And then after, he hands me his phone. And I look at it. And that the press play triangle is there. Because it's time to listen to his music.
Oh, so he had it all queued up.
He was ready. And so the thing about listening to somebody's music is, like, I went along with it because normally all you got to do is listen to a verse. Like, that's all, right? Nobody expects you to just, like, sit there and go, no, you just got to listen to a verse. And so I sat down and I got through the verse. And I was cool and I was about to, like, start handing him the phone. And then he's like, oh, no. You got to wait to see how this one plays. You see how this one goes. Something to that effect. Anyway, like, I hadn't gotten to the good part yet. That man had me listen to two of his songs, man.
Wow. Not just one. He's trying to give you a full range there.
Yeah, and I got to be honest. I rolled with the second one, honestly, just because I looked over at him. And he was so proud. Right? Like, he had this big smile on his face. He was so, it pleased him so much to share with me his music. And he's still talking about getting on in the game. He's 40 something years old, by the way. And he's still talking about getting on in the game and all that stuff. But I have to say, for the time it took to listen to those 2 minutes, it was like when the internet is out. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I was on a plane and I couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work.
Oh, no, trapped.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, man, well, whew, boy, I hope he doesn't have a third. Like, don't you got somebody else to give a massage to? You know, like.
Yeah, don't you have any other bookings? Yes. You got somewhere to go, man?
Yeah, like, you don't want to go get this money? Like, why are you there? And it is a very unique feeling when you got to listen to somebody's music. I feel like most of us have been through this at some point in our lives where you got to, like, listen to somebody's music. And it's somebody who is not a professional, but it feels rude to be like, man, I ain't trying to hear that.
Yeah, I mean.
But they know you ain't trying to hear that. And you know why they know you ain't trying to hear that? Because they ain't trying to hear that.
You did invite him into your home, though.
I commissioned him to do a service.
Yes, but that's, I mean, that if we talk about this, and if you haven't heard all the time, but once you kind of like go past that point of like privacy and allow someone into your home, like.
Yeah.
Anything can happen from like a security aspect, right?
Yeah, that is, I am putting a lot of faith in the app on this one.
And the ratings and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, you are correct. I would also note, by the way, I've used the service a few times. I normally get it like after a long week, Friday night, you know. I put either gender down. They ain't sending no woman to your house on no Friday night at 9:30. She is not sending herself.
You are right about that.
That is not going down. The one time I tried to do it in the daytime, yep, it was a woman. But no, they can't. Why can't they do that? Because they can't afford to put that much faith in no app. But yeah, no, the app said you were cool. No, that's not enough a standard for you to rock with. Anyway, now imagine you're on a team flight. And it's Jim Dolan playing the guitar. And you're like Tim Hardaway Jr. Those are not your jams. How about this, though? Has there been someone in the history of the Knicks that loved it? And they had like one player, like when Chris Dudley was there. Was Chris Dudley like, I'm just kind of jamming.
I mean, there has to be at least like one person who's like, humored him to the point where he felt encouraged by it and continued to do it, right?
That's what I was about to say. Who's the guy who got, like, the no backbone dude kissing up to the owner that's sitting next to him and being like, yo, keep going, man. This is great. This had to have been one, right?
Yeah, because it just takes one for an eternity of gratification.
Because nobody can say, hey, man, stop. Nobody can tell him that. He's the owner of the team. The Eagles couldn't tell him that. If the Eagles could not tell him that, what Larry Johnson going to do? Right. He ain't going to do nothing. They just going to listen to Jim Dolan. Ask yourself, Knicks fans, what if the Knicks got sold and you got an owner who was just as bad but didn't do fun stuff like this? Don't you want to keep them? Don't you? My bad. Knicks fans want to fight me now. All right, we'll be back to talk about that ridiculous Trevor Ariza trade in a minute. But first, guys, you ever had a made-to-measure suit? It's just so much better to have a suit that's made for your body. And there's no longer any excuse for wearing an ill-fitting suit, especially when the good ones are available at such great prices. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. That's Indochino. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. It's a unique experience where you play designer in consultation with our style guides. Guys love the wide selection of high quality fabrics and colors to choose from, and the option to personalize the details like your lapel, the linings, pockets, buttons, right in your own monogram. I had some shirts made by Indochino and I really like them. And look, let me tell you the way that this works. You visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. You choose your fabrics for the inside and the outside, choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Now this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Bomani at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. The promo code is Bomani for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. All right, so over the weekend, Gabe, you're going to need to help me walk through exactly how this went because this was so preposterous. Trevor Ariza became like a hot commodity, right? And the Lakers really want Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza would probably be really helpful to the Lakers, but the Suns were kind of on some, we're not going to trade him to the Lakers because apparently the owner said we're not going to trade him to the Lakers. And the thing you got to remember is LeBron James, homeboy James Jones, is the GM of the Suns, and they already bought out Tyson Chandler so that he could go play for the Lakers. And I feel like Sarver rightly does not want to look like they're running a farm team for the Lakers. I believe there was stories about the Kansas City Athletics back in the day basically serving that purpose for the New York Yankees. I believe that's where they got Roger Maris, for example. You don't want to look like you just a triple-A team for the Lakers. You can't have that happen. So then, all right, so it was a three-way trade, right? And they were trading. Ariza was going to the Wizards. Yes. Correct. The Grizzlies were giving up Brooks, right?
Correct.
And So what did the Wizards give up?
The Wizards were giving up Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right, Austin Rivers. By the way, I asked somebody who knows these things. I was like, does Austin Rivers have any friends in the NBA? And the response was, and I quote, hell no. Ooh. But yeah, so Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers were supposed to go to Phoenix.
Correct.
So, and the Grizzlies had to give up something other than Brooks, right?
I just knew that it was supposed to be Brooks.
Okay.
But here's where the funny part comes into play, because the Phoenix Suns thought they were getting Dylan Brooks.
Yes.
When in reality, they were being offered Marshawn Brooks, a still in the league candidate.
Yes. I did not know he was still in the league, by the way. And the key here is both the Grizzlies and the Suns say that they talked to the Wizards and that Ernie Grunfeld told each of them a different Brooks. And then the trade fell through. Now, Trevor Ariza did ultimately make his way over to the Wizards in a trade that was a little less entertaining, so I didn't pay that much attention to it. But Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers did get sent out of town. And by the way, Austin Rivers is about to get bought out.
Yes.
I wonder if his daddy gonna sign him.
I saw someone say on Twitter that because he hadn't signed with the Clippers this past season, he's allowed to rejoin the Clippers since he was on them the previous season. So that path is wide open.
Wow. You know, except, you know, they don't really like each other that much. So I never quite know if that's a good idea for either one of them. I do feel like Doc got to be like, Austin, things got a lot better after you left. Just an FYI. Like we've been doing kind of good this year. But yo, man, what's it like, A, to find out that you were going to be traded, and then B, to find out that you weren't going to be traded because nobody wants you? Like, would you rather be Dylan Brooks or Marshawn Brooks right now?
I'd rather be Dylan Brooks. I mean, he's still got his whole career ahead of him. Marshawn Brooks is hashtag still in the league.
Yeah, but I mean, just for your ego's purposes, right? You found out that your team was willing to trade you, or you found out that nobody wants you.
Well, so with Brooks, he tweeted out right after, like, go Grizzlies with a smiley face. So, I mean, that may paint his reaction a little bit.
Yeah, also, I imagine Marshawn Brooks been around the block enough times now that his feelings ain't getting hurt about these things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, his soul has seen NBA rivers, ancient dusky rivers. He's seen enough about these things. But man, when the word get out that you're getting traded and then you don't get traded, man, that's gotta be an awkward day at work. Real awkward. Like, I remember when the Rockets traded Robert Horry to the Pistons. Robert Horry and Matt Bullard to the Pistons for Sean Elliott, and then Sean Elliott didn't pass his physical, and then Robert Horry had to come back, and the Rockets wound up winning the championship. But I imagine the first couple of days had to be a little bad. Did you see, though, why the Wizards traded for Ariza, though? It seems to be in large part because Ariza gets along with Wall and he gets along with Beal.
Yeah, I mean, he had some good years there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that he gets along with them, though.
Yeah, so this is a lob up in the air for them, hoping that Wiley vet Ariza can come in and solve all their problems.
Well, I do have to say this, though, as someone, I mean, dude, Ernie Grunfeld messed up this trade, apparently, because he told people two different players, or he just said Brooks both times, and nobody, like, yeah. Anyway, if there's a positive in this, they think that Trevor Ariza can be a chemistry guy. Okay, cool. You know who I'm pretty sure is not a chemistry guy? Austin Rivers. Just a guess. How much of this trade is really just to make it a little easier for everybody to come to work? Is there a value in that? Because we have a tendency to view NBA trades through the lens of actual basketball stuff. But how about just making it a little bit better to come to work every day? Is that a good enough reason to make a trade?
I think so. I mean, that's what's going wrong there right now. Everybody hates each other.
Everybody hates each other. Everybody hates each other. It is. I don't know if you remember, this is a couple years ago where they did some interview with John Wall. And also, not that they hate each other, just as prologue for what's coming. It's not just that they hate each other, it's that they really don't have any problem talking about how they don't really like each other that much.
Yes.
You know, and they say stuff like John Wall was like, yeah, man, I like, you know, I look at Brad Beal as like my sidekick. I see this team is, I'm one, he's 1A.
I think that was like the first point where everybody was like, whoa, something's wrong here.
Oh, we're like, who says this out loud? That's such an NBA moment, by the way. But who says that out loud? John Wall does. And John Wall is the Wizards. And one guy in the league told me the thing about Wall is, they say nobody else, like NBA players who just like party hard, there aren't that many of them anymore. But there is John Wall. Like, he's living that life. He don't care what nobody, he cares, but he cares what people think about it, but not enough to stop.
Do you remember at the beginning of the season, kind of end of the summer, when there was a photo, I think like Team USA was getting together.
Oh, yeah, he looked so rough.
He looked so raggedy, man. Oh, boy.
He looked like he just woke up.
That was not a good look for John Wall.
Yo, if I'm John Wall, I got beef with Team USA on that one. That photographer knew what that looked like. We gotta keep trying till we get it right.
If I'm John Wall, I've got beef with my friends on that one. If they're letting me come out the house looking like that,
yeah, I feel,
man,
like
you gotta go brush your teeth or something.
Yeah, I feel like Ellsworth, he was like, oh, I'm supposed to be there in 30 minutes. And he rolled out there and he looked ridiculous. He looked terrible. So the crazy trade thing happened. The Wizards just looked incompetent because the Wizards always look incompetent. And now Trevor Ariza, like, I'd say Trevor Ariza probably don't want to be out there losing with the Suns, but at least it's warm. Like, does he want to go back to the Wizards?
He apparently wanted to go to L.A., so this isn't exactly his wishes.
But he's from L.A., right?
Yes, but he did sign with the Suns. So, he wished to go to Phoenix. He had the most money, so now him wishing he wanted to go to L.A., you can't exactly dictate your terms like that.
No, you can't, but it does sound like somebody had told him he was going to be going to L.A., you know? Like, I'm going to make this happen, and no, now it's not happening. Oh, God, I love the NBA. I love it, I love it, I love it. All right, it's college bowl season, a.k.a. I ain't playing no more for free season. We got a few more dudes that are doing that every year. The dude Gary at Michigan, he decided he wasn't going to play in the bowl game. I feel like Will Greer, quarterback for West Virginia, he decided he wasn't going to play in a bowl game. I saw a couple other names there. And, you know, these guys making the decision to not play in bowl games, it's very interesting to me that, I understand how the money works in this, but it's not, the larger discussion is being prompted about, like, whether the guys are right or wrong for doing that. But I feel like nobody's asking the question, should anybody be out here playing in bowl games? Like anybody at all? Because, look, I think the bowl games can survive with guys not, like, some of these guys not playing in them. Here's what I mean. Most of the bowl games that we have out here, man, we just watching them. There's no other television inventory at the time. People are laying around the house and all this stuff like that. People will watch a bowl game with anybody in it. Go look at the totals of people who watch some of these. Like, as much as we're like, oh, we got too many bowl games. You are not saying that with your eyeballs, people. Apparently, there aren't enough bowl games because people will watch any of them at all, right? So, as a result, we're going to try all these people out here to watch them. I don't think people care that much about the quality of the actual players, and I know this because y'all are out here watching bowl games with schools that y'all had never heard of before. Y'all don't really care how good the players are. I think you care about how good the players are a little bit more when you start talking about, like, this upper levels of bowls, like the Fiesta, you know, the ones that matter. I think you care a little bit more about that. Otherwise, put anybody out there in them uniforms and throw them on the field. Y'all watch it because you're not doing nothing else. I'm not judging you for it. I'm just telling you that's what it is. Like, this is the game. However, currently, the discussion about whether a player should or should not play in the bowl game is very much so tied to how good the player is. So you understand it when Christian McCaffrey decides that he is not going to play in a bowl game. You could understand it when Ed Oliver decides that he is not going to play in a bowl game. Like, the stories really play themselves out with those high-level players. Jalen Smith did play in that Fiesta Bowl and suffered a horrific knee injury that caused him to go down to the second round in the draft as opposed to probably being like a top 10 pick otherwise. And he's been really good since he came back. But those guys aren't the ones that really need to be talking about not playing in a bowl game. It is you, fourth to sixth round pick. You are the dude that needs to be nowhere near this stuff. Because, look, if you're one of these guys that they were looking at going in the first round and you suffer some injury, there's a chance that you might fall in the draft. But in all likelihood, somebody's going to be there to give you a call. If you are like a fourth or fifth round pick and something happens to you, buddy, you might never, ever play football. You might not ever draw a check. You are the dude that needs to really be out here doing the math about this. Yeah. Like, those hot shot prospects, they got something to lose too. I don't want to pretend as though they don't. They absolutely do have something to lose, but it is far less likely that they will lose everything, that they will lose any semblance of a chance. That's probably not the case with those dudes. But those other cats, no. You could lose it all. Like, I don't know why they don't think about this a little bit more. It's almost like we're looking at it as if you got to earn the right to not do it. Like, Gabe, when you were in high school, did y'all have a way for exempting your way out of final exams?
Not that I remember.
All right, so our school had it where if you had, I think, three or fewer absences in a semester and you had a grade of like 85 or 90 or something like that or higher, then you did not have to take the final exam. That is basically like what we're saying is the case with these kids in these bowl games. You know, so if you're good enough, then we can understand why you're not doing it. It does come back to what about your teammates? You are right. What about my teammates? That is a fair point to bring up. Welcome to adulthood, guys. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And if it come to getting this money, your teammates ain't going to, the GoFundMe is not going to get to be what that NFL money might be. I can't knock them for that, especially in a place where you're not playing really for anything. Look, these are exhibitions that people like to watch. The schools can get positives out of it. Like the teens can get positives out of it with development. There's the extra weeks of practice, the things that, you know, how that helps you with guys who redshirted and stuff like that. Like those things matter. There are benefits there. And I could then argue that for the schools, especially for the ones that are like not playing in the playoff, you get a greater benefit from those draft guys going on about their business. Because then you get to work in more young guys, which then puts you ahead for the following season. Boom. Everybody wins. The viewers ultimately don't care because they're going to watch anything. The coaches get developmental benefits that they would not have gotten otherwise. The players get to maximize their own self-interest. All you got to do in this is strip away all your fairy tale beliefs about what all this stuff is, and people can come out more winners. Cause y'all gonna watch. Admit it. And once you do that, you can realize that you hustling backwards by complaining about any of this. All right, we'll be back with If You Haven't Heard in a minute, but first, you know the holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why at the right time, we use Stamps.com. It saves us so much time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. You buy and print any official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. Could not be easier. You print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com's always open. Now, Stamps.com not also saves you time, but it saves you money. Stamps.com will help you print the right amount of postage every time, so you never overpay again. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage you can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. The right time, we use Stamps.com when we need to send you Unblock Me t-shirts. Gabe doesn't even have to leave the house to keep you squared away, and you can do the same. Now, right now, you too can enjoy Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. You click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Bomani. That's Stamps.com. Enter Bomani.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Tech.
I'm Aaron Mack, and I write for Slate. Security at Taylor Swift's Rose Bowl show in May reportedly used facial recognition technology to monitor the crowd for people known to have stalked the singer. A screen playing rehearsal clips was secretly equipped with a facial recognition camera to record concertgoers who were watching the footage. A command post then cross-referenced the recorded images with a database of more than 100 people who had previously stalked Swift. Advocacy groups are concerned about the use of the technology at the Swift concert. They say that facial recognition should be used for limited security purposes, and the companies must notify people if they are going to sell the data to advertisers. However, there are few states in the U.S. that have laws regulating biometric authentication, like facial recognition, particularly when it comes to private businesses, like most concert venues. Therefore, companies under the law do not necessarily need to inform and obtain consent from people to use the technology, delete the biometric data they collect within a certain amount of time, or implement other limits. Some venues are also looking to use facial recognition to register ticket holders more efficiently when they walk through turnstiles at events. But because facial recognition is notoriously inaccurate when it comes to identifying people of color, there is a risk that racial minorities will be unfairly targeted while using such systems.
So I don't want to make light of something very important, however. Gabe, how many at-risk racial minorities are there at the Taylor Swift concert?
Well, I don't want to generalize here, but I said how many?
I said how many? That's not right. I am putting a question mark there to propose it because that is a larger macro level issue, but we started with Taylor Swift and then we got there and I just couldn't let that pass. So here's the thing. I find it interesting where the advocacy groups are concerned, and I, you know me, I'm scared of the future, so I'd be concerned too. But did they say that they captured 100 people who had stalked her?
Yes. Well, there were 100 people who are recognized as Taylor Swift stalkers, right? And so they basically put out this facial recognition capture to look for those 100 people.
The idea of being stalked by 100 people?
Yeah, I mean recognized, like verified stalkers, 100.
That is, wow, dude, 100 people. Like, that is what jumped out to me about all of this. Like, I, as much as this is creepy, I don't feel like I'm in the position to be mad at her.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to blame her.
Dude, being a woman is hard, man. Like, dude, 100 stalkers. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. This is all going to wind up getting used in the worstest ways possible. Like, it's a wrap for us as free moving people. But, dang, like, that really was my thought. Was I was just looking at her like, that is really, really unfortunate that this is what you even have to do in the first place.
I mean, it sounds like a high number to us right now. But if you think about it, just in terms of how many fans there are out there of... Yep. T Swift, you know, as people call her. Yeah, but, I mean, just the percentage wise, you would actually almost even think that it's more.
Well, hold on. These are just the ones that have been identified.
Yes, that's a good point.
Only the ones that have been identified.
All right. So this next story we're supposed to get, but the reporter who will not be named let us down this morning.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
But I'll just give us a little rundown. It's from music. And so this weekend at the Rolling Loud Festival in L.A., Cardi B's headlining set was interrupted by Migos' Offset, her estranged husband, flanked by Roses, spelling out, "Take me back, Cardi." The two rappers had separated weeks earlier, months after the birth of a daughter, and early Saturday morning, he'd posted an Instagram apology for cheating on her and a plea to reconcile. He reiterated that message at Rolling Loud, saying into a mic, "I'm sorry, bruh." Her response was inaudible, but her body language read as, "Go the F away." Your thoughts?
He is getting horrific advice, and so is she. Now, the horrific advice that she is receiving, I say that because clearly her people, I think it's been reported, her people knew that this was going on. She did not seem to know what was going on, but people around her absolutely do seem to know what is going on here. And like, this is happening. I also think, and you tell me what you think about this, because I've seen the argument that people are making that this is all a publicity stunt. I think that that dude really does want her back in this way. I think that she had no idea he was going to do this. I also think it's possible that it's a publicity stunt. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Like, I don't think that if this is a publicity stunt, I don't think it's being orchestrated by the two people at the center of it.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Like, so what, like, imagine this just for a second. Somebody come up to you, you Offset, and they're like, "Yo, you know what you need to do, man? Come set it up so you can, like, try to get her back in a concert. You know what I'm saying? You go ahead and do that. Yeah, we set up some flowers and stuff in the back. You go ahead and do that." They love it when you do that, right? You know, somebody always going to say that. And then you get out there and you do it. And like, I think that he is being like mad selfish in the way that he is handling it. But I do think that we have got two competing things going on at once, which is their real live relationship and a whole bunch of people who are behind there who know how to make some money off of it. But I don't think that's individually between them.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, it does not look right in that element.
But he's ridiculous. Like, this is real bad advice that you are getting right now, young man. Like, whoever has told you that any of these things are cool, they're not gonna work. Because let me tell you something about what's gonna happen if you do get her, right? Learn something from that Beyonce Jay-Z tour where Beyonce had to do everything she could to make people start liking him again. Right? Like, she put that Lemonade album out about him. Her fans turned on that dude because they, you know, he besmirched their queen. And he going to these concerts, man. They was not feeling him. They were not on board with this. And so If the idea is that you're going to create all this scandal around it and then maybe you get it back together and then everything's going to be good, that's not going to work for you, man. Like, you all of a sudden got a whole group of people who do not like you. Now, you may remember this. Well, Gabe, you might not because you ain't that old. But back in the day, Tupac, if I can paraphrase, had a line basically, rap for the ladies. That if the ladies like you, then you'll sell the records because the dudes will get on board because they like it. Bruh, the ladies don't like this. I done talked to some of them. They don't appreciate this approach. They not really here for it. This isn't going to work. Right? And that's before we get to all the manipulation and everything else and the horrible idea. And this is the thing, man, 2018. Once you brand your relationship, man, it don't belong to you no more. You can argue everything you want about whether it should or it shouldn't. But once y'all get out there and y'all start talking about each other on the internet and having arguments in front of people from the beginning, you're not going to get out of this, right? Like, because for one, that is just the playing field for what it is that y'all do. Two, once you letting people in your business, like letting people in your house. Once they get in, man, it's real hard to get them out. You got to call the police. And they might not be able to do nothing about it. It's a very similar situation with getting people out of your business. And that is where they are. And I mean, like, it's a mix of, like, to me, like, it's, if there wasn't like real people involved, this would just be like objectively fascinating. Because this is a very 21st century hashtag relationship. Like, you know, not saying that they're like, it's not real or anything like that, but they've done it in this way in this public, and they're of the ages where they are native to this landscape, right? They are native to this particular brand of public love. Like, this ain't the last time we're going to see this. I'm going to tell you this, though, and this is something y'all need to consider. Like, for real, I don't know that dude. I ain't saying nothing about him in particular. I'm just telling you what we know about the world, right? Like, I read newspapers, all that stuff, right? If that dude is showing up with all this stuff and doing all this right now, you know, with these flowers and everything, and he's showing up at the gig, doing stuff he's not supposed to do to try to get it back, all that, how that dude going to act when she start dating somebody else? Yeah, hadn't thought about that, had you? Yeah. Like, no. These are real people. This is, hey, keep an eye on this. And like a for real eye. Show me, if y'all learned from what we've been talking about in the news the last couple of years, right? Because if you learned, you look at this and you're like, no, nothing about this is healthy at all.
Yeah, I'd like to know, did he honestly think that would do it for her? Like, I mean, did someone on his, like, PR team show him that, like, what was it, that 80s or 90s movie Say yeah. Anything with Cusack, where yeah, he's like, outside holding up the stereo, being like, take me back, please.
Here's the thing, man. He's out of answers, and if I had to guess, she changed her phone number. Because he'd been doing a lot of stuff on the internet that you wouldn't do, and she would just take your phone calls. I think she changed her phone number. Seriously. I bet she did. You got to remember, man, they got too much of their crew is intertwined. She probably had to change. She probably just changed the phone number. She ain't trying to highlight him. She done.
And we are blessed to see it all play out.
Yeah, I guess.
On social media. All right, this last story, Bo, comes from business.
My name's April Glazer. I am a tech writer at Slate, and I wrote a story entitled Birdbath, and it is about the fact that these electric scooters that maybe you've seen in your city or in a city that you visited that are taking over the sidewalks and bike paths across the country, particularly where I live in Oakland, California. There's been a kind of a trend of people throwing these scooters into the nearest body of water, probably because they litter sidewalks and are parked wherever, often blocking pedestrian thoroughfares or handicap accessible areas. I'm not against these scooters. I think, you know, I see kids having a lot of fun on them. But I noticed that a lot of them are ending up in Lake Merritt, which is a wildlife refuge in the middle of downtown Oakland, where I live. I found out that over 60 were thrown into Lake Merritt alone in October. And then I did some calling around and a little bit of sleuthing and found that this is a problem all over the country, particularly the Pacific Ocean in San Diego and in Los Angeles. People are throwing them in the ocean. You can see on the Charger maps. It's been an issue in Portland in the Willamette River and in Indiana. And so I wrote a report about how people are throwing scooters into bodies of water. It's called Birdbath. And what these companies are or are not doing about it. They are apparently fishing them out as soon as they hear about it, but people keep throwing them in. And my sense is that it has to do with the kind of irresponsible rollout that these scooter companies have taken to as they've gone into cities across the country, often without regulatory approval and often really quickly adding this other level of transportation to the city that doesn't necessarily integrate with the way people are already getting around. around. And it's been so annoying to some people that, yes, they're throwing them in the water. Unfortunately, I found out that this is not good for fish. Scooters are a pollutant. They are not supposed to be in bodies of water. The lithium ion battery has nickel, which can be a toxic additive to the water.
Yeah, you know how mad you got to be like, I'm going to just throw this in the water?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole nother step to this, right? Where it's like before people were pissed off about people throwing it on the sidewalk and that sort of thing. And now it's like, no, I'm going to go chuck this in a lake.
Yeah, like this is like the beginning of a revolution. Like this is a long road to take to be like, nah, we just going to throw this thing in the water. I tell you this though. Now these are scooters that people are effectively renting, right?
Correct.
Okay. At some point, people going to own these scooters and somebody going to do something like that. And somebody going to come try to throw that in the water. And that's going to be treated the same way you would treat it if you saw somebody running up on your car. Saying that to say one day it's going to be, if you haven't heard a story about somebody getting smoked trying to throw somebody's scooter in some water.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked that there isn't some sort of accountability for these folks who are renting a scooter, that if the scooter ends up in the lake or the scooter ends up missing, that it somehow doesn't come back to them.
No, that's going to happen, though, and it's going to happen because the scooter companies are going to have to, right? Because, look, I don't feel like them scooters are operable after they get thrown in there. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to cost them too much money, so they're going to have to come up with something to incentivize people behaving properly. There's going to be some penalties on the back end. That's what I think is going to happen.
Fair point.
All right. Got my man Jody Evergrande here with us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well.
All right. He's the man, the host of the 30 for 30 podcast. Got another season in the books. Mm-hmm. I'm on the episode by Ricky Henderson.
Wait a minute. I think you are our most frequent, because you've been on two, guest or, you know, personality. You were in the one that we did about the Miami Heat and the hoodies photo, and then you're in this new one about Ricky Henderson.
Next time I might have to charge you.
Yeah. We're going to keep coming to you until you start charging.
Yeah,
and then we're going to go to someone else.
So how you feel about this season?
I feel good. You know, we went back to 5 individual stories for this season. 3 of them happen to be about baseball. That's just a coincidence. But, you know, that's one of my favorite things about the show and about 30 for 30 in general, is that you can tell a bunch of different kinds of stories, and you can tell long stories, like with this 5-part thing on Bikram yoga, which you and I talked about before.
Yes.
And now we're back to doing, you know, individual episodes on, you know, what I would say maybe are more core sports stuff. And that's, I think, the beauty of 30 for 30 and our structures. We can just basically find good stories wherever they are and try and tell them in whatever way is the best way to tell them.
And I feel like it goes toward kind of the original vision of the film series in the sense that, and I think that now they've just been so all over the place that you kind of forget that first series, part of what made it so interesting is it was stories that were huge at the time, but we don't necessarily talk about that much anymore. And then you get like this jolt and you're like, oh man, like that's right. That was such a big deal. Like, so you got the one with Hideo Nomo, where this is one, if you were not there, you will be fascinated and engrossed by what that story was, because it's not one, like, I guess Fernando would have been in the same place too if you did something on that, but it's something that happened that was huge, and it's not like it was like a fad per se, but we just don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, well, that I think is the beauty of 30 for 30, as expansive as a series as it can be and has been. At its heart, it is historical, and moreover, as you were saying, goes back and takes advantage of something that happens over time, which is history. These big moments get reduced to like one sentence, if that. And so if anyone remembers Hideo Nomo, they remember it as, oh, he was this phenom pitcher for, you know, he took over the spring of 1995. And what they don't remember, or they never knew in the first place, was that it took basically 30 years for a player to come from Japan to the United States. There was a wall between the two leagues, and it was this incredible backstory for Hideo Nomo to position himself to come over and then have that phenomenal spring. And so that is always the most satisfying thing with 30 for 30s, is you get to cut against conventional wisdom. You get to go back. You get to layer stuff in. You get to rediscover things. You get to remind people of stuff. You know, people, it's just pure nostalgia at some level. So that's kind of the heart of the series as I see it.
Yeah, and Ricky Henderson becomes another example of that also, because Ricky is everything. But I don't know what your point of entry to Ricky Henderson would would be if you were 15 years old today.
Right. Well, so the Ricky Henderson thing, I mean, we took it on and said, look, we're not going to tell the Ricky Henderson story. We're not going to do this huge sweeping thing about one of the best players of all time. We're going to take a smaller lens, which is a very 30 for 30 thing, and look at the very last season he ever played when he was 46 years old playing in the independent league for the San Diego Surfdogs. So something people don't maybe know about Ricky Henderson is how long he ended up playing for. Certainly, I think people who knew, oh, he hung around for a while, he bounced around, don't realize that at 46, he was playing in the independent leagues, about as far away from Major League Baseball as you can get. But then what you just said, something that I think kind of caught me by surprise too, which is for being, you tell me where you think he lands, but for being someone who, if you start to count best baseball players of all time, you maybe land on Ricky Henderson before you run out of fingers.
Yeah, yeah. Or let's just look at left field, right? If we just kept it at left field, three best left fielders of all time are Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, and Ricky Henderson. Right.
And weirdly, he, of all the big names in the history of baseball, you don't hear about him that much. For some reason, he has slipped away in some weird way. And so at some level, this was a chance to just remind people. And we felt like we had to do that, even though we were telling this small story about the end of his career. We also had to remind people, and you helped us with this, just how good Ricky was and just how overwhelming of a personality he was.
He was a huge star. Yeah. Like, this was it. I mean, Ricky Henderson played for the New York Yankees in the 1980s and was the best player on the team. Like, this was, you know, a giant thing. And so it's always good to, like, go down that those sorts of roads.
And he did a particular thing that was particularly electric.
Still
and
faces.
Yeah, you know, just something about, I mean, Clinton Yates, who narrated this, he and I talked about this on our sort of bonus podcast. There's something about stealing a base that is just this unique, electrifying act, not as prevalent maybe in the way that it used to be in baseball now. And so just, he's just one of these players, just all these hallmarks, and that's what made him a star.
It's uniquely exciting. Like, I think that's something that gets lost when people talk about, you know, the interest people have in baseball and stuff like that. That is a quick and easy way to manufacture excitement.
It's 4 seconds of just pure excitement. And also fits into this thing I love in sports, which is I like to think of it as everyone knows it's going to happen, but then it still happens and it's still amazing. And so everyone knows Ricky Henderson's going to try and steal. Everyone. And he still does it, and it still feels like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. It's like a jolt.
Right. No, that is that. So what else you got going?
So we did a Ricky Henderson story. We did a Hideo Nomo story. We led off with, I'll list the other baseball story, a Jose Canseco story. That was interesting. But again, you know, we wrote it. I mean, it's basically a podcast about making a book.
Yes.
It's Jose Canseco writing this book, Juiced, which really blew up baseball, and he's the first one to name names. So that was really interesting to kind of dive into that one. We did a story about the New York City Marathon, which – you live in New York now. It is a massive, massive event. It is my favorite day in New York. The entire city comes out to watch this marathon. It used to be incredibly small. Running used to be incredibly small in this country. And so this is about the early days of the marathon, and in particular a protest with a group of women, 6 women, who decided to stage a sit-in protest at the beginning of the marathon to say that women and men should start the marathon equally. They used to have to start at different start times for all the misogynistic reasons you would expect.
Right.
And so there's this really sort of interesting hidden history there to a big story that people don't really know about. So, you know, it was just a really fun kind of collection of stories this season, and we're already on to the next one. But that's that's the beauty of this, is that we get to go back in time, as we were discussing, find moments that people have forgotten and sort of try and rescue them.
Yeah, and I guess we're coming up on the anniversary of the film 30 for 30, yeah?
Yeah, so next year, it feels like kind of catching me off guard. It's been 10 years since 30 for 30 started. I mean, I remember when it first started. I'm sure you do as well. But yeah, there's been 10 years, almost 100 films, or more than 100 films at this point. And so next year, we're going to mark the anniversary of 30 for 30, the film series, by doing a series of conversations about some of our favorite films of all time, going back, revisiting some of the films, but then also a lot of them, you know, the fact of the matter is that the film itself changed things. And so when a film came out about someone, it changed the course of their life. And so this is a chance to catch up with some of those people. And so I'll be hosting those conversations, but I also will be getting to ask this question a lot, and I will ask it of you. What is your favorite 30 for 30 film?
All right. I feel like we have to make a non-OJ designation.
Yes, that's
right?
Correct. Like, we've done that internally as well. OJ is just off to the side.
Yeah, like, you can't use the Bears or the 49ers on Tecmo Bowl. Like, this is unfair. The two Escobars is probably still the one for me.
That might be the one for me, too.
But in that one, it's much more about, like, the ambition of the project than the execution, right? Like laying out the Colombian dope trade and then going through, you know, Colombian soccer and then putting those two things together. It was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here.
And I think for a series that, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people are like, oh, it's sports documentaries. I know what this is. This is going to be in a certain lane. It's going to be like, oh, how amazing was this athlete? And, you know,
right.
And then all of a sudden that comes along and it's like, oh, this can go to
right.
a place that, you know, a lot of people didn't expect.
Yeah, like the Ben Wilson one. Ben Wilson basketball, high school basketball
coach. Benji.
Yeah, Benji, yeah. yes, there we go. Yeah, I actually randomly met one of the directors of that in the park one day.
Just in the park.
Yeah, well, he was with a friend. He was with somebody I knew who I just randomly stumbled upon in the park. Uh-huh. It was like right after I moved here. And she was like, yeah, and this is Cootie. I'm like, okay, there can only be one person. Like, yeah. Ain't for so many people that's out here going by this is their government name. You know, or at least their public name. And I was like, I met him. But that film was incredible because it laid out Chicago in a way as someone who had a fairly decent handle on the city. But, I mean, it's also hard to do a documentary on a story that you know about with a plot twist at the end.
Yes. Yeah. Which, I mean, I think is part of the art of a lot of these things, right? Because they are historical and a lot of people know where they're going. Though I will say a lot of people, I have learned in making 30 for 30s to not expect that everyone knows where it's going. For instance, we did this story about Dan and Dave, the two Olympic athletes who had this big Reebok ad campaign. They were going to go to the Olympics, and one of them did not qualify for the Olympics. And it was our very first episode of 30 for 30 podcast. And I wrote my first intro, and I just sort of casually say, this is the story of one of the biggest ad campaigns of all time that went completely bust when one of the guys didn't make it, but there's lots of other interesting twists and turns along the way. You know, here we go. And one of our producers was like, maybe you shouldn't say that Dan didn't make it in the intro. Like, we feel like everyone knows that. We feel like it's obvious. And so I took it out and put it out and, like, got all these emails from people being like, I had no idea where that was going. When Dan O'Brien lost, I was completely surprised. You know, in my head, I was like, we were signaling that from the very beginning. Like, that was obvious. But I think it was a nice indication that as storytellers, like, if you got a story and you got a twist coming – That's
another had to be there moment, right? Because the thing about Dan and Dave was nobody knew anything about them until they put the commercials out. Like, it wasn't
four
like
four commercials during one Super Bowl.
Yeah, like it wasn't like the streets was clamoring for this.
No.
And they got us. They like, okay, well, let's go see what this Dan and Dave thing is about. Yeah. And this dude, who, you know, one of the greatest decathletes of all time, just vanishes. Like, sorry, you know, can't get that pole vault thing cracking.
Yep. And then he doesn't make the Olympics. And then, of course, as we point out, you know, comes back 4 years later after a lot of therapy and a lot of sort of like getting over that mental hurdle, comes back and wins gold 4 years later, which people definitely don't remember.
It never happened.
No.
There were no Dan and Dave commercials after that.
Exactly.
They're like, no.
Yeah, no one was going to come back. Well, the funny thing is that one of the things I loved about that story was it was one of the many times in the history of, you know, sports marketing where you could tell Reebok was like, we're going to take down Nike. Like, this is going to be it. We're going to finally get over the hump with these two decathletes. And in retrospect, you're like, really? Dan and Dave, that's going to be your thing? But they spent more on that series than they had spent on their entire marketing budget the year before on that one series. They did go all in. And then it blew up in their face. And then 4 years later, when Dan O'Brien goes and wins the gold, he was signed with Nike. And so, of course, you know, it comes full circle.
Yeah, man. So what else is going on with the anniversary?
So we're going to do a series of conversations where we're looking back at some of our favorite films. Two Escobars is on my list. I think we're going to try and talk to filmmakers, but also, you know, try and talk to some of the people who are involved in the films. Next year is a big year for films themselves. I mean, 42-1, this boxing movie just came out. There's a Deion Sanders film coming out in January, which should be interesting. I'm hoping to get a chance to chat with him. And then I don't know if I can divulge some of the other ones, but, you know, there's some big names coming around. You know, I'll say this last year, the podcasts are doing really well with finding a really great audience. I think it's a great sort of outlet for 30 for 30. There were not a ton of films this last year, and I think we got a couple notes from people being like, you know, what's going on? And I can tell people that it's because all these huge, really great films were percolating and are on the horizon. So 2019, every few months, there's going to be a great 30 for 30 film coming out and the podcasts are coming out. I know I'm being very coy here, but I don't think I can announce what our big spring season is going to be in the podcast. I will say it's an NBA story based in LA, involves some scandal.
All right.
And I'll leave it at that. But soon we will be announcing what our next big season of podcasts will be.
All right. Well, that's Jody Ive again, 30 for 30 podcast. Check out the latest season everywhere you get podcasts, right?
Yeah, everywhere you get podcasts.
Yeah. This is what I like.
Or just email me and I'll walk over and just play it for you out loud off my phone.
That would be pretty impressive, man. I appreciate you stopping by, Matt.
Thanks a lot.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Jody Ive again of 30 for 30 podcast for joining us. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Indochino and Stamps.com. Thanks to our contributors for If You Haven't Heard. Thanks to Aaron Mack of Slate. Check out his story on Taylor Swift using facial recognition software to kind of keep the stalkers away. It's a bit disturbing, but life. Thanks to Gabe for running down Offset and Cardi B. And thanks to April Glazer, who covers tech at Slate. Check out her story on scooters getting thrown in rivers at Slate.com. All right, remember, subscribe to the podcast. Check us out at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And I'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.